Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, May 8th, 2016, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in America. I'm Grant and Taylor Hughes for my show, The Grant and Taylor Hughes Show, with my guest host each week, Gabriella Foster. Hi, Gabriella. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. How about yourself, Grantham?
I'm just fine.
That's great to hear.
Well, that's important, that everyone's fine, right?
That's right.
Yes, and so each week we talk about the wonderful topic of the international bankruptcy, very positive imagery and information, correct?
Okay, you broke up a little bit. Each week you said we talk about, and I didn't hear which subject you were saying. Was it sovereignty, or afiancetto?
I see. Well, actually, I said the topic of bankruptcy, which is a very yes. I was being facetious, attempting to.
All right. Well, that would come under the heading of solvency.
Solvency is facetious.
Trying to be solvent. What?
Or trying to be solvent would be facetious?
No, I'm saying, or trying to be solvent, if you're talking about the bankruptcy, a solution to the bankruptcy, right? Is that what you're talking about?
No. Actually, I was being facetious about bankruptcy being a very positive topic. But
okay.
We actually turned that into a pretty good joke, so we can get some laughs right there.
All right. I'm laughing hysterically. You just can't hear me.
I understand that. I'm glad that you find it rather amusing. Having said all that, moving right along, I'm distracted. I apologize. But I shouldn't be because I'm running the show, correct?
That's correct. So we're hoping you're in charge and...
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Letting us know what we're supposed to do, right?
Well, they say the show must go on. Everybody puts on a fakery when they do these because they're hustling and bustling beforehand. And then all of a sudden they're, oh, yes, here we are, answering the phone in a delightful manner. So, having said all that, I like saying, they say that being said, but I say having said that. So I put the gerund in front of it. I don't like putting the gerund between anyway. So I like saying, having said that. So there's several ways of doing that. Okay. And having said that, we've talked many times about, last week I was covering sovereignty at length. And because they're making a big issue out of the people declaring sovereignty without in the ordained sovereign kind. In other words, when you're born, you have ordained sovereignty. But they're making a big deal out of it because people are ramming it down the court's throat by doing it with a negative attitude. But if you do anything with that, no matter how true it is, there's going to be a negative reaction in reference to, if you're not doing it in a polite manner or a diplomatic way, I mean, I would think people would understand that. But in my opinion, it's because of the mortality factor. And just like the American tribes are trying to get their land back from the government, but in that process, do you really think the American government's just going to roll over and say, oh, yes, great, well, you can have your land back, Indians, right? You think so?
Well, after how many years is it now? We're nearly 300 years, I guess. I doubt that's going to happen.
No, it isn't going to happen in any time soon. So it's somewhat of a ridiculous position to be in. But again, to me, it's a matter of mortality and trying to go out in a blaze, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Live fast, die young, and have a good-looking corpse. We said when we were teenagers, right?
I never said that when I was a teenager.
Well, you're not a guy. I mean, that was a guy thing.
Okay, I guess so.
But as you get older, you sort of level out a bit and realize it's ridiculous, the youthful flair and all that business. But then you see it in mature adults doing the same thing. I mean, really, how credible is that they actually have an attitude? Well, we don't necessarily want it back, but we want to have a say in the caretaking of it. Oh, yeah, okay. Like they're just going to cave into that too as well. So it's really a ridiculous aspect because it's very confrontational, see? And my opinion is that confrontation goes back to the factor of mortality. Why do people do crazy things in the street like road rage and all that? Because they know it doesn't matter and they're just giving up the ship, you know, for a lost cause and a moment of a height of emotions and out of control immaturity. And there's your road rage in terms of the base of mortality again. I mean, why can't the? I mean, it's not a question of why. It's a matter of what's going on. You know, why can't somebody do something in a pleasant way? They have to go to war with. But as even my mentor has said, we live in a warring universe. So what does that mean? At the time, when is the time to go to war? You see. When is it? When is it a time to be pleasant and diplomatic? And when is it a time to confront the whole thing? See, if you don't have a chance, if you're Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid against the huge Bolivian government, even though they don't know it's out there when they leave the building, they think it's just a handful of people, and you've got hundreds of people, or Lord Chelmsford fighting the Zulus in South Africa, you know, when they have 1,500 men against 300,000 Zulus. Who's going to win that? I mean, it looks obviously, or there's 300 Spartans against all those Persians in his historical warfare. I mean, it appears to be ridiculous in terms of the overwhelming odds. Let's put it that way. Or maybe it would be like the lottery now. You know, I always say if you buy one ticket, you're a genius because you're participating. It may be ridiculous because the odds are against you, but if you don't buy a ticket, you'll never win. How can you win the lottery if you're not participating? But the person that all of a sudden buys two tickets, now they become very stupid because the odds are still against you. See, immediately they buy one and they're a genius, and right away they buy two and now they're stupid. You see, they're thinking, or the people that buy 20 and 30 tickets, that's just insane. But then how do you build up the bevy of the lottery? Are people that buy lots of tickets and are stupid in terms of the odds of winning, that type of thing. See, participation is one thing. The odds are tremendously against you, but you can never win if you never participate. So that, to me, it's a matter of same thing in society or in discussions of solvency or any of these things, sovereignty. If you're not participating, then what good is it? If you're not teaching or involved with things, then what good are you? In my opinion, I mean, you're just taking up space until the bus hits you. I use that analogy all the time, right? Stepping off the street corner, the bus hits you. Like Greg Kinnear in that movie where the air conditioner missed him, but he steps off in the street and the bus creams him.
Oh, yeah.
It was sort of a dark, humorous situation. What?
Yeah. Well, what was that movie? Where he?
I think Gary Gervais, is that his name? Gervais.
Jerry Gervais, yeah. Jerry Gervais.
Yeah, something about him.
Mm-hmm. Ricky Gervais. Ricky Gervais.
What?
Ricky Gervais.
Oh, okay, right. And he was a dentist, and apparently he died in the chair or something, and with too much Novocaine, and then he came back, and he was able to see these ghosts. So Greg Kinnear is killed by a bus, and he's able. But anyway, I was trying to make the joke about the fact that, you know, he had another opportunity, but then he was hit by the bus. I use that analogy of the idea that you never know when you're going to
be hit. He was on the sidewalk, and I see if I remember. It's been a while since I've seen that movie, and an air conditioner fell out of a window a few stories above him, and he stepped back and. The air conditioner didn't hit him, but then he got hit. He stepped out into the street to get out of the way of the air conditioner, and he was hit by a bus.
Thank you very much. I didn't really want that explanation. I just said it reminded me of that movie. But thank you for going through all
sorry.
That. Because it's my fault for not disclosing the fact that I didn't really care about the scenario. But I went on about it, too, so it's not your fault. I don't blame you for that. So I do apologize to the studio audience and all the audience that is here for our really displacement of the entire topic, which we do quite often, as you all know now. Correct, right? But people can't be amused for a half hour on Sunday nights. What?
Well. And apologies to the non-studio audience as well.
Correct. And at the same time, people can have a 30-minute amusement each Sunday if they'd like to listen to my show. You're bound to have a few laughs, right? If they're not laughing at the material, maybe they'll laugh at the jokes, correct?
It's possible. I'm very helpful, aren't I?
Yes. You are very much so. But that quick wit and that repartee make for the show that people really appreciate. Having said all that, I guess we were talking about the idea of the attack on the sovereigns, but they're probably the ones that don't help the situation in terms of the attitude. I think that, I know even though people use diplomacy, but isn't there that old proverb that goes, you can catch more flies with honey? Is that valid, or is it too remote or general in terms of all situations? I guess it's not the case. People just don't care, and they're therefore, the bottom line is they want your money that you don't have, basically. So they think you can come up with it. You know, if you pay for one thing and you think you're a cash cow and you can come up with it, more money and what have you. So the resourcefulness of people, I guess we're counting on that in society because they raise the prices of everything, believing that people are going to become rich on profit. In the competition worlds of profit, people think they're going to become rich. I mean, some probably do. Then the interesting thing is the bank gouges you for later on in your retirement. You know, not to condemn the banks, but most of the lower banks are involved with selling bank guarantees to retired wealthy people. And they experience that, but it's not well known. It doesn't get in the newspapers about it because mainly the journalists wouldn't know how to sort it out or how to write about it. And secondly, it's a real black mark on the entire banking community, even though they would say that they're justified for doing it and selling bank guarantees to people, you know, for at a profit. And then they tell you can make a profit of millions of dollars, and then the next 20 years after they retired, they try to sell that paper, and there's no way in the world that's possible. You see, so that happens thousands of times daily. But very few people are aware of that and probably won't be ever, except for when I talk about it. So that's a big issue. And I've gotten halfway through the show already, boring people stiff. Are you bored over there? Are you sleeping?
I am sleeping. No,
all right,
I'm not.
She's sleeping.
I'm kidding.
Very good.
I'm
well
kidding.
Done. I don't blame you.
I'm answering you for sleeping.
Well, I don't blame you. I understand.
I was not sleeping. It's pretty obvious if I'm answering your question that I'm not sleeping.
I didn't really think you were. I was just running with it because I was thinking of something else, actually.
I see.
But,
all right.
But I'm distracted, apparently. What? Go ahead.
All right. Well, maybe we should move on to a new topic.
Oh, I see. Well, I was actually talking about the sovereignty in reference to it being challenged by the courts, but I still think it's the proper definition and explanation has to prevail in reference to the fact that it's the truth. I mean, the people are ordained sovereign, but they must be in my opinion, they need to have an acted sovereignty in a document form in order to properly use their licenses. Because of the fact that we're in a contracts law world, the proper use of a license would mean that you would have the right to use that license. But I've said this many times, you have the right to use a license, but how do you prove it? And how do you prove your birthright? I mean, I went through a painstakingly many, many years ago asking that question to the legal fields, and I used to get all sorts of answers and what have you, but they can't really pin down the idea of sovereignty in the marketplace, but I do. I'm probably the only one that really explains it properly, in my opinion. So therefore, that's why people are running into trouble out there commenting about sovereignty, because they don't know what proper sovereignty is. Just like I've said many times on the show, that SPC, secured party creditor, is not proper sovereignty. But then they would argue that point, but then they're not looking at my opinion too, the points that I make in reference to who issues SPC, what kind of information is on the documents. Do we look at the documents? Look, people don't even look at what's on the face of their money. They don't even know daily I show the people what's on money, and they never have looked at it. It's just very interesting. Then people that scrutinize it get into issues about government and things of that nature, and they're always wanting to go back to the specie currency, which is so ridiculous. That still is an ongoing thing of complete and total ignorance, in my opinion. It's just ridiculous. The whole specie thing is completely absurd, because instruments by a proper sovereign should prevail in terms of medium of exchange. But we know that we're only accepting a dollar bill as international peg. Okay, that has to be a case in terms of all monies are traded as dollars, even within international currencies, has to be converted when they trade it at bank trading, in terms of that, I'll say. And therefore, that conversion still remains the same, but you can't use other instruments that would create I call an awkward transaction, not improper, but one that would be questionable. You call it a questionable transaction too, because people don't question currencies in their country. I mean, if you go to France and spend euros, they used to use French francs, but now they use the euro there. They're not going to question you going to the boulangerie, the bakery, and buying a pastry. They're not going to question that if you're buying it with euros. But if you were to go in there with an A for V, an accepted for value instrument, they would question that immediately of what are you doing here, or any other form other than the country currency that you're using at the time. So if you have a smooth transaction, then that's what you want to do. You want something that is not questioned in terms of buying whatever you're doing, whatever you're purchasing, whatever the purchasing power of the currency exists, however, it's not redeemable in specie, because it's all legalized paper. And they argue that point online about fiatization, but I've never seen anything of value in terms of the argument. It doesn't hold up. It's not valid information online. I always tell people, you're pretty much wasting your time going there. I mean, you can talk to me about it, and I don't know what other sources there are. That's why I'm always saying I'm the recommendabilist, the last say in these things, however hubris that may be. Correct? However hubris. H-H, alliteration. Yeah. All right, so I gotta burn off 10 minutes here, and I guess I'm out of gas. I should have 20-minute shows, right?
God. Well, that really makes your audience feel good that you're completely bored and you don't have anything to say?
No, I'm not completely bored. I'm kidding. It was a joke.
Okay.
It's two-thirds of the way through a joke. You know, we tell a joke every 10 minutes, right, on the show? You're supposed to do the first 20 seconds to get your attention of your audience. Going, oh, this is really great. It's a lot of fun. Talking about the bankruptcy and these dry subject matter. which I think is really important, but I think other people do too when they get into the meat of it, so to speak. And just like the paradox of the solvency, people want to get the countries solvent, get them in banking equilibrium, and get out of the debt situation. But my opinion is we have an answer to it, but to implement it will be another story. I don't really think it's possible to implement it. And you know why, don't you? You know why I don't think it's possible to implement it? Yeah. Do you remember why? To put you on the spot completely.
Okay. Why we can't implement solvency, you said?
Correct. Well said. Thank you. That's the question
anyway.
So you have the question
right
now. Do you have an answer?
Implement it. Well, I mean, but you had a solution to make everything solvent. Why isn't that a good solution now?
Well, we have a solution, but it's not implementable. But you know what? But you realize why it's not. When I brought it to my UK group about 3 years ago, and we were discussing solvency, we realized at the time that it wouldn't be possible. But you know why, the variable why it wouldn't be possible to implement?
Why it wouldn't be possible?
Yeah, we have the thesis, which is really important. We have the knowledge. To implement it is nearly impossible right now. Do you know why?
Okay.
I guess.
No, I don't know. I actually don't know why. No.
Well, I mean, I said it before, but again, these things are boring topics for most people. And I don't blame people for it, but I do understand it. The issue is that because we don't have an approximate mathematics, we have to have approximate mathematics in banking. Otherwise, because you cannot measure collectively the bank accounts, because it's impossible to do that. Because math is not a collective science, it's individual. So when you go out to measure accountability, then it all falls down in terms of accountants have their GAAP stamp and somebody else has a GAAP stamp, a general accepted accounting principle stamp. They sign off on the pro formas of saying this is the accounting and the bookkeeping of ABC company, right? And then somebody, other accountant goes in there and measures it and gets an entirely different number set. You see what I mean? And why is that? Well, because to me, math is relative. So that means that if the bank, and it appears to be a really complex topic, but if the bankers could agree on doing approximate mathematics, then we would have an answer and we could implement solvency. See, but I don't really think it's possible. And that's my opinion, and that's what that discovery took place a few years ago. We have a thesis in synthesis right now. I mean, antithesis. It's not in a synthesis possibility because of that issue. So you understand what I mean in terms of the banking community can't agree on approximate mathematics.
Right.
So that means that, like overages of a penny, or they would still cause a bank overdraft if you're a penny off in your account. Correct.
Yes.
That's what I mean. So, you see what I mean? They don't allow for a certain percentages of overdraft, then it's never going to work. You see what I mean? So, we're always going to be in a state of bankruptcy, and therefore, we're always going to be using the UCC in reference to remedy in courtrooms. And you see, that's a problem. But again, people are not aware of the issues. I mean, I'm aware of the issues, because we go at length in terms of obtaining the issues, obtaining the information that's necessary to reveal it closer to the truth than what they have now that's out there, in terms of thinking that there is banking equilibrium when it's not really possible because you have a science that doesn't keep up with it, right, in terms of measuring.
Mm-hmm.
See, so it's a foolish thing to say that we have a thesis, but you can implement it, but you don't have a science to do it with, a proper science. And I'm saying science in terms of mathematics. The science of mathematics is not workable because the community can't agree on how to utilize it. I mean, you could do a approximate mathematics to say a 1% overdraft issue would be okay, would that work? I don't know. I haven't really analyzed that thought because I know that it wouldn't be even a consideration by the banks. They wouldn't even consider running things in the red and then allowing for that without without causing an overdraft, right?
Right, because the bank, the money that the bank has is in a state of flux all the time.
Correct.
So I'm sure that they close out end of business day and they have a certain amount of money in there, but on their books. But then, you know, people are still using their cards and writing out checks and making deposit off banking hours. So it's not going to be the same from day to day. So it's always in flux. It's always moving.
Well, that's why I'm saying it doesn't work because people can't balance their bank accounts and neither can the banks balance their accounts. See? But they don't admit it. They're already using approximate mathematics, but they don't want to admit to it. See what I mean? That goes back to my, I call it theory, law, and practice. The law would be the specific concept, but in practice, it's not possible. See, the possibilities aren't there because, like you said, you even said it, it's in a state of flux. And if it's in a state of flux, then it's impossible to measure it. See, it just isn't, it's not a workable scenario. See, they're already doing approximate mathematics, but they won't agree that they are doing that. See, they think they're measuring it dollar for dollar, or penny for penny, or pence for pence, whatever you want to call your lowest denomination. They think that they've got it all accounted for. And that's just ridiculous. We know that the countries are in debt and what have you because of that, because they can't keep track of it. See, that's why the entire monetary system, medium of exchange, is a complete failure, because you can't keep track of it. But they won't admit that, see? They say, okay, we're going to put a general accepted accounting practice stamp on it, and the big four will be your accountant, and then they declare these numbers are correct. But that's all hierophantism. That's a declaration, a decree, or dictatorship to declare that everything is in equilibrium. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely not true. I mean, it's just a total falsehood and absolutely incontrovertibly, adamantinely insane. And I, having said that, I got down to the 2 minutes, Mark. How about that? Yay! Uh-huh.
Ta-da!
Funny, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for being on the show this week. I appreciate your presence and your commentaries. And it's always fun to do it. It's 30 minutes out of people's lives on a Sunday night, and I appreciate you all being here. I think we're doing a good service because my opinion is we're the only ones really giving out any truth in this arena. Just like the attack on sovereignty is unjustified, but it's justified if the people have a bad attitude and are not diplomatic in terms of their presentations to the court. I think we need to be courteous about things and be truthful, be courteous. And I really believe that. I truly do. So, again, thank you for being here this week. And hopefully we'll be back here next week. And and we'll get through some more of this information that I think is really necessary for people to get. And they're entitled to it. They're entitled to have this information that we offer. Like I said, it's an honor and a privilege to be a voice for this, for the information I think that is completely true and in terms of our topics of health, sovereignty, and afianchetto. All right, so we're getting down to the last few seconds, and I want to thank the journeymen that come on each week and the new people that are listening in. And we have about 500 shows in the archives. This is Grantham Taylor Hughes for my show, the Grantham Taylor Hughes Show. Have a great week, and goodbye for now.
Baseball player, the 2016 insurance MLB All-Star game ballot is here. At MLB.com/vote to choose your AFC worthy stars and send them to the All-Star game. Just isn't enough.
Hands.
Another game. I'm at a table meeting at 6 o'clock. Alyssa, how's the traffic?
The fastest route is 45 minutes downtown.